Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday we strive to expose the destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, as most do on other programs, our mission here is to understand what is actually occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world. Even differentiating this program from many other talk radio programs that you may listen to, this is a program about facts and about conclusions that can be drawn from those facts. It isn't a forum for simply exchanging unfounded opinions. We try to find the truth. And then we try to ascertain what that truth means for us now and in the future. During our second hour, speaking of truth, we're going to engage God on His terms, which, by the way, means that we are not going to be religious. We are not going to use faith. We are not going to share our opinions. We're going to examine the evidence He has provided and use reason. Since His is the lone credible and reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion, toll-free, 877-300-7645. Before I begin this morning, and I'm going to begin where I left off, I want to thank particularly Scott for hosting these last three programs. Expressly want to thank Larry, who has a tremendous understanding, particularly of Yahweh's testimony as it relates to who He is and what He has done on our to our Rasuli, who called in at the as he normally does on Friday. I was at my eldest son's wedding. Spent the last 5 days either en route or in the East, celebrating one of the great institutions of life. As I told my son and now daughter-in-law and those who had come, Yahweh has told us that He created the entire universe. Now, think of its size. Here we have a universe that has hundreds of billions of galaxies, each with hundreds of billions of stars like our sun. And He conceived life, all for the concept of marriage, because He wanted to have a family. He did all of it for no other reason than He wants to have a family. He didn't care if that family had one child, Adam, or if the family had two, Adam and Shiloh, or if the family had three, or 3,000. God wants to have a family. And I also shared that in the Hebrew, the word for family and home is the same word, Beth. It means family. It means home. And that word forms the basis of Bereth, the word that we view as covenant, which not only speaks of a relationship, but also of marriage. And the only difference between home and family, Beth, in the language of heaven, and Bereth, covenant relationship and marriage, is the addition of a Rosh, the R in Hebrew, Beth versus Bereth. And it's interesting that the Rosh speaks of two concepts. First is that this family, this home, is Rosh, first, best, the top priority. Nothing is more important. Nothing comes before it. Barishith, which is based on Reth, is the first word of the Torah in the beginning. The only reason that God created this universe is to integrate the concept of family and home with His covenant relationship via a marriage vow. So we add a Rosh to Bereth, to Beth, to get Bereth. The second aspect that we learn from this Rosh, this additional letter in the language of heaven, is that it's drawn depicting a human head. What does it show? That we have ears to listen, expressly to Yah's testimony. We have eyes to observe, expressly Yahweh's testimony. Our mouths, enable us to respond, not only to communicate as part of a relationship with him, but also with one another. But never forget, when you're showing the drawing of a human head, what's the largest organ in the head? It's not your eyes, it's not your mouth, it's not your ears, it's your brain. And so God wants us to process what he has written for us in his Torah teaching, what he has shared through his Torah instructions and through his prophets, to observe it, to listen to it, to process it in our brain so that we come to understand who he is and what he's offering. And then we can respond. And there's nothing that is a more tangible expression of why we exist than marriage. It is the ultimate celebration of life and of family and of growing and great journeys of discovery, of love. And so with that introduction, and again reiterating, I'm extraordinarily grateful for Larry for hosting two programs, for Scott for participating in those and hosting two programs as well.
I don't know if we can really call it hosting, but I appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah, well, you know, it's with Scott as well as with Larry, it's a different perspective, a different place to be if you're responding to someone versus you're initiating the discussion. And so I was glad that both you and Larry had the opportunity to initiate discussion, and hopefully both will continue to respond to discussion as well. It's something I would have expected, Scott, for you to have experienced, is that the first day is a little nervous. You're kind of wondering, how in the world is this going to go? You're quite unsure of yourself. The second day, it's much more comfortable, and by the third day, it actually becomes fun.
That's very true.
So we're going to continue to do this as a collaborative effort. I have promised that today I'm going to resume where we had left off. I don't think that since the WikiLeaks disclosure, where the U.S. government was exposed for untold malfeasance, where we learned that the U.S. government knew 5 or 6 years ago that the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan were unwinnable, that we had made bad situations worse, and that there was no way to resolve them, and we continued to allow Americans to die. Through WikiLeaks, we learned that. Through WikiLeaks, we learned that our government knowingly was aiding and abetting Pakistan, while we knew that Pakistan was aiding and abetting terrorism. In fact, that Pakistan was inspiring, communicating with the Taliban to kill Americans, and that the money that the Pakistan government was using to control and to communicate with the Taliban so that they could kill Americans came from America. We were literally making the best enemy money could buy. WikiLeaks provided that information to us about the malfeasance, the lack of morality of the U.S. government, and most people yawned. It was one of the greatest gifts ever given to the American citizens. It was also a gift that was given to the British, because with the WikiLeaks article, the Brits and other American allies who participated in the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, we learned through WikiLeaks that these governments all knew that President George W. Bush had lied when he spoke of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, when he spoke of the smoking gun being a nuclear bomb because Saddam Hussein had purchased yellow cake uranium and was on the cusp of building a nuclear weapon, and that each of these countries, when they sent their own sons and daughters into Afghanistan to stay on the good side of America, that they knew that the whole world had been lied to, by George W. Bush, and they didn't bother to expose that to their citizens, and yet they sent their sons and daughters to fight and die in a war based upon a lie. That was all part of the WikiLeaks, and America and the world yawned. Well, now we move forward a number of years, and we have Snowden, who was a contractor working for the NSA, and as a systems administrator, he got access to everything that was in those files, and he exposed the fact that the U.S. government was engaged in criminal activity, that it was spying without due process. You cannot be more criminal than deliberately, knowingly, purposefully, massively violating the rights protected by the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. government has been doing it, is doing it, and he had the absolute documented proof that the U.S. government was involved in criminal activity, and he blew the whistle. It was one of the great gifts given to the American people, and what are the American people doing? They're yawning. It's as if it doesn't matter. It's very much like what we do in the second hour of this program. You know, yesterday, flying back to California, which is where I am now, I sat by a gentleman who introduced himself as a Christian Palestinian. And after explaining to him why it was a myth to consider himself a Palestinian, he said, okay, I'll correct that too. I'm a Christian Arab. And then we got into, well, you may not want to refer to yourself as a Christian either. And for him, as it is for most who are religious, he was at least aware that his government was engaged in terrific malfeasance, and I'll speak to that in a moment. But for him, as a religious individual, God's testimony didn't matter. It was universally discredited by saying, well, that's your interpretation, as if God was not an effective communicator, and that the plain meaning of the words that he communicated, that he wrote to us, that he spoke to us, are not clear, and that massively different interpretations are possible because he did not communicate clearly. The same God that created life in this universe will return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm Yana. If you want to participate in this conversation, you're more than welcome to disagree with anything I have to say. Our phone number is 877-300-7645. Before we turn to the Dianne Feinstein bit of malfeasance, where Dianne Feinstein cited the David Headley case, which he was the gentleman that surveyed all of the venues in Mumbai, India, where Islamic terrorists working for Pakistan's government, the ISI, via Lashkar-e-Taiba, killed 166 people, maiming hundreds more. How she claims that it's okay that we spy on Americans and that we violate the U.S. Constitution, although she didn't use those terms. It's just what she's inferring, because we stopped him and were able to arrest him as a result of these intrusions into our privacy, so you should be grateful. And so we are going to, in a moment, continue the story of David Headley. It is one of the most revealing in the world. It's a story that ultimately, when you know the truth, will cause you to recognize that giving your government the ability to spy on you and to do harm to you, to constrain your rights to engage in what was once a free society, is the wrong thing to do, because your government not only can't be trusted, it is actually working against you and is routinely lying to you. So we're going to return to that in a moment. I just want to share a couple of more insights regarding this plane flight and the conversation I had flying back from my son's wedding yesterday. It's interesting how a religious person, and this is the same thing for a political individual, a patriotic individual, their response when you tell them this is what, and as a religious person, this is what God, whose name is Yahweh, said. And you and you present his perspective and his testimony, they negate what you said. They choose to not deal with what you say, always by two ways. The first is say, well, that's just your interpretation. And that's your opinion. Well, what that is saying is that in fact, it was actually expressed that two people reading the same testimony would come to entirely different opinions about it, different interpretations, which is to say that God cannot communicate clearly. Now, we in the second hour are going to examine, as we often do, Yahweh's testimony. And I want to tell you, one of the reasons that I've come to know for certain that he exists and that he authored his testimony is he is the most effective communicator in the universe. But the religious myth that, well, you that's just your interpretation of what he said, your opinion, has to dumb down God so that he is less articulate than our men. And the second is to say, well, I just don't want to believe that because I think religion does good. I think that there are good aspects of religion. I think that if it causes people to do good things, then that's the way that it should be. And what they end up doing is no matter what God says, they have an opinion, as if their opinion mattered. You know, if God says, I want you to observe the Shabbat, and they say, well, you know, I feel good about going to Sunday worship services. So therefore, their opinion ought to matter. Might matter to them, certainly doesn't matter to God. Now, I also said I would speak briefly about the individual's comments about government. He was an executive of a healthcare firm, the largest healthcare firm, and was talking at length about how absolutely nothing in Obamacare was designed to actually constrain healthcare costs. And that the consequences of Obamacare are going to be absolutely devastating for the healthcare industry. That it will be the single worst, most expensive new law passed by Congress in decades, maybe ever. And that the direct consequence of this is going to be that hospitals which are already on the cusp of going bankrupt, will. That they will have to be broken up. They will end up having to be controlled by government because this health care reform is devastating to them because it lowers the amount of money they receive for treatments. And they're already on the brink of bankruptcy. And that its whole plan was to make more people dependent upon government, and its design was to fool Americans into accepting it under the auspices of the idea that healthcare providers were the enemy. It's like all of the changes economically to the country have been done under the auspices that business is evil, that corporations are the recipients of welfare as opposed to the sources of the indulgences America receives. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I'm your host, Yetta. We're going to now return to the case of David Headley. For those who didn't listen to the program last week as we were covering David Headley, this introduction is probably necessary. Dianne Feinstein, who's the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, a California senator, justified, rather than saying, okay, we've been caught, we ought not have been spying on Americans. Yes, this is that the court order by the secret court to collect data on the when and where of Americans' use of their cell phones and the tapping into Americans' use and those also of foreign national use of the internet through Google and through Skype, through Apple, through Facebook, through Twitter is a direct violation. It's a criminal act if we value the U.S. Constitution, and We've been caught. We ought not have done it. You know, I apologize. Rather than do that, she says, oh, no, what we're doing is good. And let me give you an example of a terrorist act that it thwarted and leading to the arrest of an individual. The example she gave justifying this massive criminal activity by the U.S. government and intrusion into our private lives was David Headley. And so it became, I think, our responsibility to investigate the lone example that the U.S. government gave of justifying its massive criminal activity regarding what was the story of David Headley. And when you actually study the truth, consider the evidence regarding David Headley, what you find is that the U.S. government was complicit in terrorism, that it made the Mumbai attacks possible. Rather than using these programs, PRISM and the telephone confiscation of private information, to thwart terrorism, the U.S. government had knowingly, deliberately, and purposefully aided and abetted the terrorist acts in Mumbai. David Headley worked for the U.S. government. And it is also interesting that James Clapper, the person who has come out trying to charge Snowden with criminal activity for releasing the proof as a whistleblower that the U.S. government was violating its own constitution, he was the very person whose David Headley's wives went to expose Headley as someone who was deliberately perpetrating and planning terrorist attacks. And it was this very same James Clapper who at the time dismissed it all and allowed them to take place. So the blood of 166 people is on his hands.
He's also the one that back in March, wasn't he asked if he was collecting any type of data on millions of Americans? And he said, no, sir.
He said, absolutely no, sir. Yeah, so he is the Clapper who lied to Congress. Now, what should happen if you are an officer of the U.S. government, you're asked a question by Congress, which you're sworn to oath, and what you say is, he didn't say, I can't answer that question. He said, not in an open, in an open session, sir, I cannot answer that question. He lied. Now, are you allowed by the U.S. Constitution, by its judicial processes, to lie under oath and get away with it?
No, I believe that's called perjury.
That is called perjury. And do you see that the U.S. government going after James Clapper and arresting him and charging him with perjury?
No, I saw Obama defend him the other day, though.
So if you are defending a person who is guilty of committing a crime, what is that called? Obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
Right. That is also a crime, isn't it?
Very much so.
Yes. So didn't the President of the United States, when he took office, swear to defend and uphold the U.S. Constitution?
Yes, he does.
So when the President of the United States was briefed on a program that violated in massive ways the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and he did not uphold the U.S. Constitution, but instead upheld a program that undermined the U.S. Constitution, was he not thereby guilty of violating his oath of office?
Not the first time, but yes.
Then why are we not calling for his impeachment?
My guess would be because nobody wants to report on it. Nobody is, it feels like a minority of people that actually pay attention and want to know.
You know what my sense is that you're right. But my sense is the exact same situation as with Yahweh and his Torah. Now, I'm not going to put the U.S. Constitution in the class of Yahweh's Torah, but a comparison for this exercise, I think, has value. Religious people the world over, in fact, even non-religious people, if you don't consider socialist secular humanism a religion, the religion of man, routinely ignore the fundamental document, the constitution of life, the constitution of our existence, the document that explains how we came to exist, how life was conceived, and how we ought to live on this planet, and how we can succeed and live even beyond this planet. That constitution, the constitution of our existence and of life, is the Torah. What percentage of people in the United States and around the world actually pay attention to the Yahweh's God's constitution? Actually read it, consider it, pay attention to it, care that it is being violated. How many people stand up and say, you can't do that, you should not do that, you can do it, you shouldn't do it, because it's a direct violation of Yahweh's instructions? How many people?
Hundreds of millions.
Yes. At very most, thousands amongst billions, or hundreds amongst millions, one in a million. Same thing is true now with the U.S. Constitution. Now, U.S. Constitution and Yahweh's Torah, not in the same class, not in the same, a magnitude of importance, but America was based, founded on its Constitution, and very few Americans bother to read it. They don't care that it is being violated, and that if, then the reason that they should care is if the underlying and the fundamental document that governs this state and provides freedoms and protections for the people is undermined and completely neglected and abused, is that it means that nothing has value. That the government, if it can violate its own constitutions and people don't care, and no one responds and say, wait a minute, I've read that. It says you can't do that. If people aren't willing to stand up and say, I've read that, you can't do that, we need to hold those accountable who have done it. And rather than going after Snowden, we ought to impeach the President of the United States. We ought to impeach every senator and congressman that's defending the program that knew about it. We ought to impeach the judges who authorized it. That is what we ought to do. But who's calling for that being done? Who's
Nobody.
Doing that? Nobody.
Very few are trying to hold people accountable.
Yes. And when you do that, it becomes easier and easier and easier for your government to control everything that you do, to steal every freedom. And make no mistake, their surveillance and capture of information, it isn't just on surveillance and the capture of information. They can absolutely constrain your freedom of movement, your freedom of commerce so that you can't buy or sell anything. They can constrain your liberty and incarcerate you. They can kill you.
Well, you need a passport in order to leave the country. So,
yes.
And they control that.
Correct. So we are really in... This was... I called the WikiLeaks America's last best hope. For Americans waking up and realizing they ought not be patriotic, that they ought not be political, that they should be opposed to their government, that they should listen to Yahweh's instructions. The first requirement of the covenant is to walk away from your country. And I begged people to use the WikiLeaks releases to come to this realization. And now you have the Snowden release on PRISM and Telephone Spine. And yet most Americans are ignoring this. They got another chance.
Well, they spin it as being an attack against us somehow. And all he did was give us information. He released information.
Absolutely.
It's not an attack on us.
Right. And before we really are going to get to finish the Headley story over the next couple of days. But the most amazing thing here is there is absolutely nothing that Snowden revealed that can aid and abet any enemy of the United States. The U.S. government, immediately after 9/11, remember, created their color schemes for the terrorism. Height level is blue today, and the next day it might be yellow and orange, and there was red. And they said that they based it upon the collection of data from the NSA in terms of terrorist chatter, which means internet communications and the interception of cell phone and satellite communications. And so the U.S. government acknowledged back now more than 10 years ago that it was doing this very thing. So this release of information in terms of the internal documents that say, yes, the U.S. is doing exactly what the U.S. said it was doing 10 years ago, isn't news. There isn't a single significant Islamic terrorist organization on the planet that communicates today using their cell phones or using the internet. The only people that communicate via cell phones and the internet are just lowly individuals. The any significant group does what the United States trained them to do a decade ago. They pass handwritten notes via couriers. That's what they do. And they've done it now for a decade. And so there was no part of this disclosure that had any influence whatsoever on Islamic terrorism. None. And there was no chance whatsoever that doing this was going to thwart Islamic terrorism, because Islamic terrorists were even told on their public websites, don't communicate using the internet or your cell phone. Because it's all being listened to. They knew it. And so for this to be an act of treason, the only other people whose information was being confiscated by the U.S. government were ordinary citizens doing nothing wrong. And so if Snowden is being tried for, or is going to be tried for treason, if he's being brought up on charges of treason, that means that the American people, knowing that they're being spied on, telling them that they're being spied on is a treasonous act. Who does that make the enemy? Makes the enemy of the U.S. government ordinary citizens. That's the only rational conclusion that you can draw from this evidence. And so why do the majority of American people think it's just fine that the government does this? Because, after all, they're protecting me from terrorist acts. Oh, no, they're not. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So, the story of David Headley is one that is extraordinarily important to us, because the chairman of the Senate's intelligence community that is responsible in large part for the spying on American citizens. Now, it isn't solely responsible. If you were to look at individuals who are the single most responsible, first and foremost would be King George II, W. Bush. He's the person that pushed it through as a bit of legislation. So he is the most responsible. Obama pledged that he would end it, and yet he embraced it. He is amongst, and perhaps the second most responsible. And the senators on the Senate intelligence community would be the next most responsible, as they provide further authorization for it. And then those who work for these agencies, who absolutely believe that they are above the law and above the Constitution, they are next most responsible. Those are the criminals in this particular case. And they collectively gave us one example of an individual whose terrorist acts had been thwarted and who had been arrested and convicted as a direct result, as a benefit of us relinquishing our rights to the U.S. that are provided by the U.S. Constitution. And that was David Headley. That was the name given by Dianne Feinstein. And so we've spent several programs considering the story of David Headley. And what we learned was that David Headley was handled, managed, and funded by Pakistanis' inner service intelligence, their version of army intelligence, military intelligence, the CIA, NSA, and FBI rolled into one. Probably the most powerful agency in the Pakistani government was managing and funding, training David Headley, was sending him on trips around the world, and particularly to India, to conduct that mission in Mumbai, that terrorist act, one of the most brutal terrorist acts in the last 50 years. We learned that David Headley was also an employee of two U.S. government agencies, one that has been disclosed, the other being obvious, the DEA and the CIA, and that he was a heroin trafficker with the DEA, and yet he was freed from his jail sentence for trafficking in heroin so that he could be paid and deployed by the DEA, and then was used by the CIA, which is why his case never came to trial, why he was given a very light sentence, and why he was not executed, and why he was not sent to India. You know, America right now is crying that Snowden has to be released by Russia, extradited back to the United States, and is threatening Russia. Well, when the shoe was on the other foot, and the American would have been egregiously exposed and condemned by the world for knowing full well that the Mumbai terrorist attacks were going to occur because one of its agents was planning them, the United States would not extradite David Headley. So when the shoe was on the other foot, the United States didn't play, which makes the United States a complete hypocrite in this regard. So let's continue the story. Faiza Otalha, a Moroccan citizen, was David Headley's second wife. Now, the first wife left him because Headley, a Muslim, was beating her savagely. And when she left him, she went directly to the FBI and disclosed the fact that her husband, David Headley, was planning terrorist attacks in India. And the person who investigated the information, the testimony that his wife gave, which was detailed information about Headley's planning of the terrorist attack back in 2005, 3 years before it happened, was one James Clapper. Same guy that we hear today. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the program. And thanks again, Larry. Let me get you a thank you personally for all that you did on last
nice
week and
hear,
Thursday and Friday.
It's nice to hear a competent voice back
on. No, that's not the case.
I have to tell you, it's pretty rough. It's a rough job getting on there and doing this. I did point out last week, and I've been saying this, how in the world could him, you know, spies already use countermeasures.
Mm-hmm.
They were well aware that they were being listened to.
Of course.
And I just wanted to point that out. I'm with you. Right on the board.
Yeah, stay with us for the next segment, Larry, as we go to Yahweh's testimony. And we'll conclude even that comment that the realization is that Snowden didn't release anything that helped our enemies, only what helped us.